Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Our supersized episode this Ides of November afternoon begins with a preview of new Up TV holiday flick, Country Hearts Christmas. Executive producer Beth Stevenson joins me next from Toronto, Canada. Another made-for-TV movie, The Day After, made a colossal impact beyond its ABC premiere 40 years ago. Discover how next half hour with David Craig, the author of the new book, Apocalypse Television. Future Day continues to build a group of TV channels good for all ages. Executive producer Jennifer D'Angelo, or executive Jennifer D'Alejandro, excuse me, Alessandro, begins our second hour with a progress outlook. And Nat Geographic is back with its latest season of Life Below Zero. We'll post today's program with executive producer Joe Listiger. Also ahead, Sharp's return to TV set making with Roku's assistance, our classic trivia question, and what's up, Terrible? Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and presenting the iHeartRadio Podcast Network and more than 40 other great podcast destinations. This just in, it's November 15, 2023, the Ides of November, and tomorrow will be televised. The first half hour of today's episode is brought to you by Liquid IV, fueling life's adventures and your well-being with real hydrating. Good to have you with us wherever you and especially you out there are on this Wednesday afternoon. We welcome you to this special two-hour edition of the program all about TV's current and future. 51 degrees at the top of the hour here in the Big Apple. Got some wonderful guests for you throughout the entire 120 minutes ahead, and we invite you, as always, to interact with our guests. How? You pick up the phone and you dial in with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, or TuneIn Radio. We got our Chapman business for you. It's Simon Apollo 4 by name. That's the Chapman play, and you'll find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the promo is on the air, you can connect others and interact with them by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn screen. Follow those instructions. It'll keep me live with you. Beth Stevenson from Country Hearts Christmas on Up TV. She will join us live from Toronto, Canada, after these news notes. Sharp is back in the business of making and selling TV sets nationwide. This time around, smart TV sets are what Sharp is making, under the Aquos label. What's more, Roku has come on board, providing the operating system for these sets. Initially, Sharp's Aquos brand products will be on sale through select department stores, consumer electronic outlets, and online retail sites. Voice remote and smart home environment compatibility features are included. Popular podcast American Hostage, featuring Mad Men star John Hamm, will be developed into a live-action scripted series. Hamm has agreed to do the adaptation, reprising his role as radio reporter Fred Heckman, who agrees to interview a hostage taker on his popular newscast. Producer showrunner Sean Ryan will oversee the series in association with Sony Pictures Television. Hamm, already on track to launch his own Toon series, Grimsburg, on Fox January 7th, also will serve as an executive producer on American Hostage. Now, quickies, what if the animated Disney Plus series based on the Marvel comic book begins season 2 December 22nd? A new episode will premiere each night through December 30th, 9 in all. CNBC will kick off a quarterly series of specials highlighting series of cities of success December 6th. Music City, USA, Nashville, Tennessee is the first subject. Apple TV Plus's Christian Dior bio series, The New Look, starts February 14th. Emmy winner Ben Mendelsohn plays Dior, with Oscar winner Juliette Binoche as Coco Chanel. Yvonne Orji will host Off Script with The Hollywood Reporter, a new unscripted attraction coming next year to AMC Plus and Sundance TV. All Black, that's ALLBLK, raised the curtain on the second season of Hush December 7th. And NBC will highlight New Year's Night 2024 with the debut of America's Got Talent's Fantasy League series. That is news notes for today. And now, joining us live from Toronto, Canada, the executive producer of the new Up TV movie that premieres this Sunday night, Country Hearts Christmas, is also the head of our own production company, Brain Power, Beth Stevenson. Beth, happy near holiday season, and welcome aboard.
Hi, Simon. Nice to be here.
And great to have you here, Beth, and doing it with a movie that actually is not only for the holidays, it's a sequel to a movie that has already debuted and done very well on Up TV.
That's correct. So that premiered, we premiered with Country Hearts on October 22nd, and the network, UpTV, was extraordinarily happy with the ratings, and we had already pre-filmed Country Hearts Christmas, and so that, which is premiering this Sunday. So it's just, it's nice because it's got a lot of different components to it. It was sort of built as a franchise and really conceived to have a lot of depth to it. So I think that the viewers who, even if you haven't seen Country Hearts, you will meet the Jameson Smith family. And, you know, I think there's lots to love there.
Mm-hmm. How did the project come about in the first place?
So we actually had one of our executives from UpTV, Chrissy Miller, visiting us here in Canada. We're actually located a little bit north of Toronto in some really beautiful horse country, farm country, historic, you know, towns, rural towns. And I was driving her around from set to set on a Christmas film we were doing, you know, several months ago with her. And she was just sort of saying, like, there was a couple of things. We had a country music franchise that we had on their air called A Very Country Christmas, which went to a full trilogy. And she also has a lot of other projects on that are either country music based or horse based. And she just said, look, we're having a hard time finding something that's specifically for our audience that has, you know, real texture to it, has a real faith forward, you know, story component. And I said, well, you know, we've been working on something that's, you know, country music based because we, you know, our franchise has come to a close. I said, we also have another, you know, horse business that we've been put, and we just, like, as we drove in this sort of beautiful fields of corn and, you know, this really idyllic place, you know, slowing down for tractors. I said, like, how many times do you get to be driven around by a production where you have to slow down for tractors? Anyways, we just conceived the show together. You know, we had really wanted to work with Chris Jericho for quite a bit too. And so we really looked at him as the patriarch for this family. And I think we really dive deep a little bit into Chris's background and his music background outside of the wrestling ring, and like, what could we, you know, how could we bring this character to life? So that was the beginning and the genesis. So it was in the sunshine, in a truck, by a cornfield, really thinking about, you know, the values and how we could kind of put this franchise together for sure.
Beth, most people know Chris Jericho, as you said, as a pro wrestling star, first with WWE, now with AEW. They don't know, unless they've seen the initial Country Hearts movie, that he also has done country music singing. And they do know that he has done some acting here and there. What made him an ideal person to not only be in your movie, but also to basically be the main character?
Well, I think sometimes when we're looking at, you know, when we're looking at casting overall, one of the things that we do like to look at is specifically catering a role to someone who, you know, maybe at first glance it doesn't make sense. You know, like we've done some great movies with people from Dancing with the Stars, and the first thing we say is, we don't actually want you to dance in this movie. Obviously you can dance, but, you know, what is the kind of storytelling that you're interested in? And I think, you know, because of his wrestling persona and everything that he's sort of done in the past, I think we came to him with a character that has some homages to his past, because he had toured in it with his band Fozzy before, you know, and we sort of helped to shape the backstory of our family, that it was, you know, country music royalty in the 90s meets, you know, someone who's a rock and roller at heart, which is, you know, our character Bones, which Chris plays. They fall in love at the Grammys, and this beautiful family comes from that. And I think it was really respecting that sometimes people want to step outside. I mean, it's certainly, of course, he's done lots of films where wrestling's a part of, and I know he's definitely open to continuing that. But I think this was, you know, that, and then really once he came on board, the writers absolutely respected that he had the ability to perform, and that, you know, he is, you know, is compassionate, and really reshaped him as a great patriarch for this family. And having said that, he also is fighting some demons as well, right? Like we have him, the character of Bones, having quite a past. And I think, you know, this is something that potentially resonated also with Chris, is that the character has depth. He's just not a, okay, girls, let's see how it's all going. He really has some real meaty scenes where he's struggling. He looks to his faith to solve some of those issues. And it felt close to his essence, but also a departure from what people maybe know and have seen him in different lights in the past, for sure.
Country Hearts Christmas is one of 8 new original main TV movies for the holiday season, running on Up TV, available on cable and satellite. 2 have already run. Country Hearts will be the 3rd, and it premieres this coming Sunday night, November 19th, 7 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. We've got Beth Stevenson, the executive producer of the film. She is also head of her own production company called Brain Power, and we'll talk about what these folks are up to in 2024 and beyond in a little bit. If you have a question or comment for Beth, make that call, 646-652-2906. And you'll be part of Tomorrow Be Televised on the supersized 2-hour edition on the Ides of November 2023. Sam and I are with you live from New York, 52 degrees at the moment. And let us hear from you. Second of 3 episodes we're doing this week. We have another one coming your way at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, on Friday. And on Friday, we're going to get into a service called Unify. It's a mobile app that allows you to search for your favorite programs in a better way than normal. And it's also coming to smart TV sets as well. Chief Executive Officer Jeff Lawrence will be with us. And then next week, we've got our annual tradition, our Thanksgiving week triple header. We'll have 3 episodes for you back to back to back. The first one next Monday will come your way at a special time, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Check that time out, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. That's because the International Emmy Awards are going to be in person this afternoon at the New York Hilton Midtown Manhattan that afternoon rather than that evening in terms of press. So we're going to be going and covering it for the first time in a long time. So again, next Monday, the first of our 3 triple header episodes, Thanksgiving week, is going to be at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, and then our other 2 will be with us Tuesday and Wednesday at our usual hour. And coming on Tuesday, Fox Nation is a very interesting docudrama that's about to premiere called Liberty or Death, Boston Tea Party. Executive producers Tim Kelly and Lorenzo DeBoni will both be with us. By the way, Rob Lowe hosts and is involved as executive producer of that Fox Nation special. That's coming your way next Tuesday, part of our Thanksgiving Week triple header, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, exclusively here on Tomorrow We Televise. Beth, how do you try to make this film, this Country Hearts Christmas film, different than in some way than other Christmas holiday movies, which is, of course, gets tougher and tougher to do with all the holiday movies out there?
Well, I think the word I would say is gravitas, and I think that that's something, like, we have an incredible partnership with UpTV. I believe this was like our 30th film that we had done with them, and one of the things that we really appreciate working with them as a network is that they really focus on things that are potentially not that cookie cutter Christmas. I mean, I think they allow some real drama to unfold within their Christmas films and to see some struggles that people might have around the holidays. So I think that's something that, in terms of the differentiation, there's also a tremendous amount of live performances. And I think, you know, our star Lainey McCauley as well, who plays Tori, is a country music performer in her own right as well as an actor. So she's sort of this beautiful, you know, combined threat, that it's not just like, oh, hey, can she act, or, oh, hey, can she play music? It's just, it's beautifully, you know, shines from her. And I think that that makes a big difference, because when you have people who are potentially stronger as an actor and they may be getting some assistance, and, you know, there's pre-records that they're singing to, like, there's a beautiful song, and we have all the songs on Spotify as well. There's just a couple of beautiful songs and ballads and Oh, they're so, anyways, it's just, I think there's touching. We have an incredible music supervisor called Chris Robinson that works with us on a full-time basis, and it allows us to really shape the music, and it's not just sort of an afterthought in post or, you know, something that's rushed in prep a week and a half before production. Like, these are things where songs are gone out and looked for or been done in conjunction with the talent, or we will option, you know, songs that they have previously recorded. So there's an authenticity. So when you're doing the world of country music, you're doing it with people who actually have a background in that space. And I think that, you know, we've made a lot of films around the holiday season. I think those feels are real and those feels are genuine. And I think if you present, you know, storylines that kind of allow people to connect a little bit better and to really understand that there's lots of frustrations around Christmas. Sometimes you can't be with your family. Sometimes you are, you know, you do have to choose. And I think that gets very well presented in the film, for sure.
Did you film this in Nashville or in Toronto or somewhere else? If it was somewhere other than Nashville, how do you recreate the ambiance of that city?
Well, sometimes we'll actually send a unit out within the city to actually get some real authentic landscape and cityscape and streets and that. I mean, we're nice as we're – the area that we're in, first of all, we get real snow, which is really beautiful. But additionally, we have a lot of different architecture here that we can play for kind of anything down the whole – Eastern Seaboard, you know, Philadelphia, Baltimore, way down into, so our architecture is pretty close to it. So there is time and care that's taken, but generally the filming does take place in our studio because we do own and control our own studio, where we have our own standing sets, and we have also another facility that's kind of, it's sort of a big, you know, family home that gets redressed time and time again with 5 acres of forest around it. So it does allow us to kind of really bring some significant movie magic to no matter where our films are set, we can fly there.
Mm-hmm. Way back when, in the 1970s, CBS made a holiday themed film called The Homecoming, starring Patricia Neal and Richard Thomas, and written by Earl Hamner. And, of course, that was the prelude to The Waltons, which became one of the great television series of its kind. Any thoughts, even before this film premieres, of Country Hearts becoming a series?
Well, there are lots of discussions on that, and what's nice when we sit down with the writing team, because it sort of takes a village here to get everything to air. What we do is we'll write a Bible that actually it feels almost like a 1 hour television development, so that we know that there's depth to the family. We've even been able to use these two films almost like these are first episodes and sort of say who was popping, who was shining, what did people talk about, what were they excited about, you know, as we kind of cater, whether it becomes a movie wheel, which is the term that networks use when they're doing multiple wheels, which of, you know, multiple installments of a movie franchise, or whether it could move to full 1 hour. And I think all the development and everything that's gone into the characters, the interpersonal relationships, the choices that our character Tori has in multiple love interests that are sort of there for the taking. This absolutely has been set up to extend, whether it's on a franchise movie level or whether it's 1 hour.
Hearing Beth Stevenson, she's the executive producer of Country Hearts Christmas, the sequel to Country Hearts, which appeared earlier this fall on Up TV. And this film is coming your way this coming Sunday night, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on Up TV, available on cable and satellite. And you can also catch more wonderful, originally holiday films on Up Faith and Family. That's the service available through Up Entertainment on smart TV sets. smart TV devices, and multi-channel bundles. Beth's with us a few more moments from Toronto, where her production company Brain Power is located. We're going to talk about what Brain Power is up to for 2024 and beyond in a moment. And if a question or comment on remaining minutes with Beth, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Simon Apple, I'm with you live from New York, New York. We're just getting started with a great two-hour edition of Tomorrow Be Televised on the sides of November, Wednesday afternoon of 2023. We hope all of you are having a great run to your Thanksgiving week ahead. And remember, you can also catch us live on Sports Newswire. It's the week daily sports news information show on Sports Grid Network. I do a weekly feature on TV Sports. Did it earlier today. Sports Newswire with Craig and the crew. You can find it on Sports Grid Network, available on smart TV sets, devices, and also on Amazon Freevee and other multi-channel bundles. That is happening every day, Monday through Friday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. It's Sports Newswire with Craig and crew. That's 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, only on sports. So, Beth, you've got your own production company, Brain Power. Tell us, first of all, what else you've done in 2023, and then where are things standing for 2024?
Okay, well, we do a lot. So in 2023, we're right now on set doing a Christmas film for a network based out of North Carolina, and that will premiere in 2024. But this is our eighth movie this year, and then we do two more movies before the end of the year, or we take a long winter's nap, as we have to say. So apart from Christmas films, which we obviously have a great history of and love to do them so much, we've been doing some fun mysteries. We have a Lifetime film that's coming out in the early months of 2024, which we had so much fun doing. Which was a kind of a thriller, but got a bit of a comedy twist to it, called Hunting Housewives, that stars Denise Richards, and that will be coming out next year. And then in terms of filming, we are in the middle of a four-picture franchise with Hallmark for the Hallmark Mystery Channel, and that stars Jodie Sweetin. The first of the installment actually aired last May, and then because of the success of that, they picked up more, and that's called The Jane Mysteries, and that's for Hallmark. So, I mean, our essence is that we like to do things that are feel good and that people are looking for or just want to have a little escape, and whether that is in the kind of a little bit of, you know, that sort of Lifetime exciting kind of cat and mouse place, or just in the significant feel good and things that you can kind of just sit down and take your mind off of things. So we do have a lot going on, but this is in terms of our throughput and what we do every year, we do somewhere around, you know, 9 to 12 movies a year. We have done 1-hour dramas in the past. We actually have a series called The Wedding Planners, which is on Netflix, and it's also on Up TV as well, that we completed. So we're probably looking at, we have not only Country Hearts, but a couple of other franchises that will either continue on the movie side or else move into the 1-hour drama space. So we're just excited. We're thankful to be working, as many people are in our industry, with all the sort of changes and disruptions and audiences changing how they're looking at things. We are just there to show them great things, and we have the ability with our studio here to be able to be very prolific, which is, you know, what we like to do every day.
Yeah. And we'll end on this, Beth. Now that the writer's strike and the actor's strike are now over, and the actors are now in the process of ratifying the contract, they started on Tuesday, are you starting to get more proposals for series or for original movies or for specials that look very appetizing?
I think so. I mean, for someone who's been in this business for a long time and looking at how even the strike in 2007, 2008, it takes a while for everyone to sort of start the machines moving again. Again, we've been very in a good place. We've been able to film during the disruption. We've got a couple of interim agreements that we were able to continue to film. So I think it's a little different than when COVID hit and everybody was like, okay, great, now we're back. We're right back at it. And there was a real kind of pent-up demand for content. I think there's going to be a lot of careful consideration, a lot of understanding what the resources are and what resources, whether it's network television, whether it's the streamers, everything. I mean, again, we're just feeling blessed to be working. And I think that we'll have to see. I mean, as you suggested and talk about the news, you can see every day there's changes and potentially cancellations and things. So, I mean, we remain extremely optimistic because people still like to find new things to watch. It's just a question of where they're watching them, how they're watching them, and how everyone's, financing them.
And also we're seeing all these new, some of them fast channels, all these new networks that are popping up on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles, some of whom want to get very much into scripted television, whether it's with series or made-for-TV movies or hybrid scripted or semi-scripted. So we will see what obviously pops from there. Again, the movie is Country Heart Christmas, starring wrestling superstar Chris Jericho, now on AEW, by the way, on TBS, TNT, et cetera. And the movie premieres this Sunday night, November 19th, 7 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time on UP TV. Check the locals for where that service is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the service, go to uptv.com. And there's more holiday movies and more coming your way on UP Faith and Family. That's available on smart TV sets, smart device, and multi-channel bundles from the same organization, UP Entertainment. Pat Stevenson, thanks again for joining us. Congratulations on the sequel to Country Hearts in this Christmas special, and hopefully more movies and maybe even some series, including something on this on our way in 2024. It's been great to have you here.
Thank you so much, Simon. Take care.
You too. And from all of you, have a very wonderful holiday season and a great year ahead.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. Pat Stevenson from Brain Power and Country Arts Christmas on UP TV joining us live from Toronto, Canada. More of our program coming up after this word from Liquid IV. Here's a new wellness routine that's easy to take and keeps you in hydrated shape. This Liquid IV, a great-tasting drink mix in stick form that when you add with water, delivers hydration to your body faster and more efficiently than water alone. What's more, you get five, count of five essential vitamins, B3, 5, 6, 12, and vitamin C, and three times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks. There's 12 flavors to drink, all delicious and refreshing. We're talking about Concord Grape, Passion Fruit, and Watermelon, and now there's new sugar-free drinks, or zero-sugar drinks, like Green Grape and Peach. You know, Liquid IV is gluten-free, dairy-free, and soy-free. So go to liquidiv.com to order, and you get 20% off using the promo code TELEVISED at checkout. Now, 20% off anything you order when you shop for better hydration today. Use that promo code TELEVISED, TLEVISED, at liquidiv.com. Liquid IV, fueling life's adventures with real hydrating. This is Tamavi Televised, the promo about TV's current and future. Happy to have you with us on this Wednesday afternoon, 7 afternoon, live from New York, 51 degrees near the bottom of the hour. And if you have questions or comments for our guests ahead over the next 90 minutes, make that call. Very simple number, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Don't forget, we have one more episode coming your way this week on Friday. And on Friday, we will have as our lead guest, Jeff Lawrence. He's the Chief Executive Officer of Unify. It's a new way to help you search better for the shows and channels you want to watch. Currently, it is a mobile app, but also it's coming very soon to a smart TV set or device near you. Jeff Lawrence from Unify, he is our lead guest Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Coming up in our next half hour, our classic trivia question of the week. Next last time, we are offering the question, five prizes in play, if you are first emailing the correct answer. But first, it was nearly 40 years ago that ABC presented a movie that shook the nation and ultimately the world in a lot of ways. The show, The Day After, starring Jason Robards Jr. and an amazing cast, won several Emmys, I believe won a Peabody Award also. I saw that film when it came out, and now there is a book about how that one film helped end the Cold War. It's called Apocalypse Television, And Professor David Craig from the University of Southern California will join us live to talk all about it. He'll be on after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is the Best Internet Radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and Tune.com, together reaching 100 million listeners around the world every month and growing. If you love gospel music, check out my Gospel Soul Radio on BTR. Happens tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. That's my Gospel Soul Radio live for you tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, BTR always comes your way 24/7 on YouTube. Welcome back to Marby Televised, second half hour of four big two-hour super show for you on this Wednesday afternoon. Happy you're with us. I'm with you from New York. You are wherever you are. And this half hour of our program is brought to you by Online Grocery Sun and Swell, offering a world of delicious snacks and pantry faves anytime. Welcome those who are just joining us at the bottom of the hour, 51 degrees at the bottom. More great guests coming away in the 90 minutes ahead, and we invite you to interact with them. It's so simple. Pick up the phone, call this number, 646-652-2906, or use this chat room, SimonApple04, by name. On November 20th, 1983, ABC presented a made-for-TV movie unlike no other, a film that ultimately was seen by more than 100 million U.S. citizens and ultimately more than 1 billion people around the world. It was called The Day After, and a three-hour movie it was about how an idyllic town became hostage to a nuclear attack. Jason Robards Jr. led the cast. It was an amazing movie. It won several Emmy Awards. I saw when it first came out. It was absolutely shattering. And now there is a book 40 years later about how that film did more than just rattle U.S. citizens and the world. It helped end the Cold War. The book is called Apocalypse Television, How the Day After Helped End the Cold War. And joining us live right now from Cambridge, Massachusetts, is the author of that book, Professor at the University of Southern California, David Craig. David, good to have you here.
Thanks for inviting me, Simon. I appreciate it.
How did you come to write this?
I spent 25 years making television movies, and I was inspired as a child because TV movies were shown in my classroom and taught me how to better understand race relations out in the world, helped me understand social issues. So I came to Hollywood to produce those movies and had the great opportunity to do that for about 25 years. And when it came time to move over into my current career in academia, there was only one story I really wanted to research and tell, and that was the story of how ABC and Brandon Stoddard and all of the storytellers involved with this project helped save the world.
Before we get into that, what made-for-TV movies did you do over your career?
I did about 30, most of them as an executive at Lifetime and A&E Television. The ones I like to highlight are a movie called Flight 93, which is about one of the ill-fated planes that crashed on 9/11. I did a movie called Wedding Wars, which was a satirical comedy about gay marriage equality. And I did a number of docudramas, historical docudramas, literary adaptations. My last project was for Lifetime, a project called Girl Fight, which was about the perils and risks of social media and teenagers, which was about 10 years ago before I went full-time into academia.
So how did The Day After get to be made? I mean, this was one of the most ambitious made-for-TV movies ever, and by the way, rarely gets seen on television in recent years. I've seen it in recent years, and I saw it when it first came out that November night in 1983. It was a Sunday night movie, and it was a film that I think a lot of people were very much unprepared for.
Indeed, although the made-for-television movie had already become a steady diet of these high-concept event movies that often foreground important social issues. If you think about TV movies like Autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman and Brian Pong and Roots and Something About Amelia, this had already become a destination for audiences to better understand some of the most important issues of our day, but not from the news end, but from the entertainment divisions. And there was a whole array of executives that worked in the TV movie division who understood, as one person said in my interview, that television was the only book on the shelf, which meant that they recognized that while they were also there to make money and bring in ratings, that they had a responsibility and they were accountable for the use of this medium and this format to be able to educate and enlighten audiences. And there was no one who better represented that than the head of ABC Movies at the time, Brandon Stoddard, who had already had phenomenal success with projects like Roots and had become already described as the father of the miniseries. So this project came about really because he walked out of seeing a feature film called The China Syndrome, which imagined what would happen if a nuclear power plant was destroyed and what would be the consequences there. And he came away from this with the inspiration, what would happen if there was a nuclear attack on the United States. Now, 3 weeks later, after coming up with that idea, after watching the movie, the world almost experienced exactly what was depicted in the film with the Three Mile Island incident. And so what became a high concept, what if, story that he intuitively understood would get a lot of attention suddenly became more of a dire, important mission that he needed to try to use this power that he had and his colleagues had in the TV movie department to try to break everyone out of our nuclear stupor and our belief that this was not only not going to happen or that there was nothing we could do or to stop it. And that became a cause that he took on.
Mm-hmm. Talk about the people who made the movie and about how it jolted people. Because I remember watching it. It starts with this wonderful sweeping landscape of small towns and cities done to a wonderful score by the great composer David Raskin, which I believe he adapted.
Yes.
Some of it was his music, some of it adapted from a famous classical music piece. And so you have this, like, sweeping landscape, sweeping music, and you're, like, thinking, it's like super Americana. And then as the film keeps going and goes, and then it turns into a nightmare.
That's correct. It was a very deliberate strategy in the development process. And this was jointly agreed upon between Brandon Stoddard and Ed Hume, who Ed Hume was one of the most successful series pilot writers of the 70s. He did a lot of the best cop and detective series on television. But at night, as he would say, he would moonlight by writing these TV movies that would foreground important social issues. So he came into the meeting with ABC, and ABC had already concluded that this needed to start off as a bucolic tale of an idealistic kind of Midwestern American setting. In a small town that just happened to be surrounded by nuclear warheads and missile silos, and then it needed halfway through to turn into the most powerful disaster film you could ever imagine.
And it was also a film that when the nuclear attack happens, there is this wonderful sequence. It reminds me of – you ever see the movie San Francisco, the 1930s film with Clark Gable?
I'm going to say, I apologize, no. I'm going to now. I will.
It has this amazing scene. It's clearly a classic. When the earthquake hits, it's incredibly well-edited, photographed, you know, montage of all these things happening as the earthquake is hitting. And in this film, when the nuclear attack happens in this location, there are these wonderful scenes where people just get zapped, and they use these special lighting effects where the entire screen goes white. As somebody gets zapped, as somebody, you know, disintegrates, and it goes like fast, and that was new. Nobody ever tried something like that for a special effect in television, I believe.
So this is a credit to the producers and to the special effects team. This was also a consequence of this was a $7 million disaster film that was originally produced over two nights. So there's actually a lot more that was shot and ultimately not put together, but. Then when it came down to how do you show the apocalypse happening, there was zero probability of being able to recreate this other than a few bit of turning Lawrence, Kansas into a ghost town. They went out and a associate producer went off and collected every ounce of footage they could find from nuclear documentary footage, mostly controlled by the U.S. military, and secured the rights to that footage and came back in and added together what is probably one of the most memorable montage sequences in history that features a lot of footage that you'll still see to this day whenever you turn on any documentary about the nuclear bomb or the arms race. And then they applied these additional added special effects where you saw essentially the hallucination hallucination, if you will, a kind of a depiction of seeing human beings suddenly being completely fried by the nuclear blast. And the other interesting story that came out of this was the difficulties they had with recreating the mushroom cloud. And there were numerous failed attempts to try to recreate the depiction of a mushroom cloud over Kansas City. And it came down to an accident. The day before, they really had to throw everything together for the film. The effects team walked in finally with the right version because someone had poured milk into a clear glass of tea. And if you turn that upside down, it was identical to what you would imagine a mushroom cloud would look like.
I want to point out that ABC was very sensitive about where the advertising was placed in that movie, that they made sure that that the film, that whole sequence, was before, during, after, was all carried in one sequence. So you did not have commercials, you know, in the midst. And they were very, very sensitive about that. And they made it very clear also. They even had, I believe they did it, do a parental warning, that warning, this next sequence is, you know, could be tough to take.
That's correct. It came with a number of advisories, including a very sober John Cullum at the very beginning of the movie, warning viewers that this was the ultimate trigger warning of what could possibly cause, at the time, very real concerns about a mass audience panic, much like you saw with War of the Worlds. But you also had a lot of educators, and even ABC's education department had issued a number of advisories and warnings about whether or not children below a certain age should watch. There's no question that there was a tremendous level of sensitivity on the part of the network, but it was also opportunistic because the truth is they could not get advertisers. It was very hard to convince your typical broadcast television advertiser to put their products or services on after watching The World End.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking with David Craig. He is the author of the new book, Apocalypse Television, How the Day After, that's the movie we're talking about, that ran on November 20th, 1983, nearly 40 years ago on ABC on a Sunday night, How the Day After Helped End the Cold War. David joins us live from Cambridge, Massachusetts, outside Boston, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon, I'm on with you live from New York. Good to have you aboard on this Wednesday afternoon. Make a call. Be in the conversation, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, the next episode, Unify is a new app that allows you to search for your favorite programs and networks in a far better way. Currently it's on mobile, but it's also coming on smart TV sets and devices near you. Jeff Lawrence, the chief executive officer of that venture, he'll be joining us live as our lead guest. That's Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, our annual Thanksgiving Week triple header. The Monday episode will be on earlier than usual, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. Tuesday and Wednesday will be on at our regular time. And on Tuesday, we'll be joined by the executive producers of a new Fox docudrama special called Liberty or Death, The Boston Tea Party. Rob Lowe hosts it. He's also an executive producer. We'll have fellow executive producers Tim Kelly and Lorenzo DeBoni. That's next Tuesday at our regular time, 3 p.m. Eastern Pacific, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. So how did The Day After first galvanize the audience was watching it and then ultimately impact the world?
Before I go even any further, Simon, I do need to make sure that it's clear that this was a collective effort of a number of incredibly important creative people, including the other members of Stoddard's team at ABC. But, of course, the director, Nicholas Meyer, the writer, Ed Hume, and the producer, Robert Papazian, along with a lot of cast members who took a huge gamble in appearing in a film, particularly at the early stage of their careers, that dared to depict the end of the world. So a big shout-out to all of that creative team. So this was 1983, and this was, at that moment, this was the peak of the nuclear arms race. We had pursued a policy for decades of mutually assured destruction on the belief that neither superpower would dare to push the button, so to speak, because they knew that they would be causing World War III, and it would be the end of the world as we knew it. At that moment, also, scientists had come out with reports that said the effects of nuclear war between the superpowers would be met globally by what was called nuclear winter, which would destroy essentially a version of Noah's flood in a way and destroy the climate and cause long-lasting and cascading effects. But at that exact moment, the superpowers had spent decades not only building and bigger and better bombs, but bombs, enough bombs to kill the world many times over. And it was precipitating an escalating effect that at any moment could have caused a false alarm or an accident. And there were, in fact, a number of instances even in that year in 83 where there were false alarms that could have easily triggered the launching of these bombs. And there was little to no effort on either side towards real de-escalation. There were some talks about reducing arms and maybe trying to stop building more nuclear weapons, but there was little in the way of trying to reverse engineer this policy that had been going on since the 50s. And it had resulted in the largest protest movement since the 60s around what was called the nuclear freeze. And there were activists around the planet who were coming out in the millions, including a million people in Central Park, who came out saying that this is crazy. Madness is madness, and that there needed to be an end to the escalation of the arms race, if not real efforts towards de-escalation. And there didn't seem to be any way to reverse this pattern despite the concerted efforts of millions.
So what is the basic theme of apocalypse television? Whoever reads your book, what do you want them to come away with the most?
Thank you so much. That's a great question. I want to come away with that at every stage in the development of civilization, those who tell the stories have the power to save the world. And in this case, this was an example of people who were harnessing, at that moment, the greatest medium the world had seen, which was broadcast television, to find ways to reach the widest possible audience, to help elevate, escalate, and educate and enlighten people about the real threats and peril posed by this technology. And we have every reason to believe that this is a pattern that will be replicated over and over again. Even with new media, social media, digital media, streaming services, storytellers come now in very different shapes and forms and varieties. But they all have the agency. They all have the means and the power to try to push out the message, to build cause, to create pro-social good, to essentially use this technology to reach to move the world forward, to help spin the world forward. And that's fundamentally why this book was written, to better understand that it's up to us, even those of us with now the means in the palm of our hands, to try to make the world a better place.
Mm-hmm. Something else that The Day After did was it provoked at least two other made-for-TV projects dealing with the nuclear issue, but doing it in the form of a videotaped drama that at situated a newscast, or one of them was Special Bulletin, a two-hour one from Don Ohlmeyer that was on NBC, very well done, with Ed Flanders and Catherine Walker playing the main anchor people as they watched something going on in Charleston, South Carolina. Scott Glenn was in that that program as well. And then there was Countdown to Looking Glass. It was made in Canada by Fred Barzyk, a very famous independent video maker, that actually had real journalists involved. Patrick Watson, who was one of the best journalists out of Canada, did the 51st State for a couple of years on public television, Channel 13 here in New York. He also was the host of CBS Cable in the 80s. Nancy Dickerson, the former NBC News White House correspondent, one of the first women to be in that role, or in the role of a correspondent in a major way. Eric Severide, the CBS News commentator. I wonder, did you have a chance to see either one of those? And I'm curious if they were figured in the book as sort of like offshoots of The Day After.
It's funny. There are over 1,000 films, documentaries, including made-for-television movies that have in some ways attempted to highlight and raise awareness of the risk and peril of nuclear war, all the way back to horror movies from the 1950s that imagine atomic fallout. At that moment in 1983, there were really four films that I highlight in the book specifically. There was, of course, War Games, which was inspired by this true story of our Department of Defense waking up at 3 in the morning and finding out that there were tens of thousands of Russian nuclear warheads heading our way, which turned out to be a false alarm from a glitch in the system. Then there was the movie Testament, which is a beautiful film that was a much more intimate version of The Day After that was made for PBS, American Playhouse, and then released theatrically about 3 weeks before this movie aired. Then there was Threads, which was in many ways the British version of this story, and many would argue was a much more powerful version of the story, but also was quite explicit in terms of the politics of trying to place blame on the superpowers and how it put countries like the United Kingdom at great risk. But the most interesting story that I found was the fact that the very template of imagining a world after post-nuclear strike was inspired by a couple of things. One was a BBC imaginary documentary called The War Game, which was produced in the 1960s but then never released. It was a 1966 film by Peter Watkins, kind of a pseudo-documentary, and it almost has the exact parallel plot of what happens if a small city were to be suddenly destroyed by nuclear attack and how would it cause society to completely disintegrate. BBC was afraid to release it. They did release it theatrically. It won the Academy Award for Best Documentary. The other reference that I like to give is that Ted Koppel, early on in his career, before he even took over Nightline, had aired an 11-part segment on ABC News about the risk of nuclear war. And in one of those segments, they had done a look at what would happen if the aftermath, the day after a nuclear attack. And a lot of these were, yet again, the best examples of how the aggregation, the accumulation of all these stories were absolutely vital to what led to this turnaround. But then again, it came down to this one film in this one moment that happened to be seen by, at that time, the most powerful man in the world, President Reagan, that really caused a sea change in how we negotiated with the Soviets and led to, ultimately, the end of the arms race. Mm-hmm.
By the way, if you haven't seen Testament, great performance by Jane Alexander in that American Playhouse production. I believe she was nominated for an Academy Award because the film was released not only American Playhouse on PBS, but it was released in theaters as well the year it came out. We are speaking with David Craig. He is the author of the brand new book, Apocalypse Television, How the Day After Helped End the Civil War. He is our guest this half hour from Cambridge, Massachusetts, outside Boston. It's on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom and Alvin with you live from the Big Apple. And if you have a question or comment, any minutes with David, make the call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple041. And classic trivia question coming up before the top of the hour. David, what's your feeling now about the made-for-TV movie, especially since we're at a time where even though it seems to be more made-for-TV movies happening every year, and not just from the broadcast networks, but more from the cable networks like Hallmark or Netflix, Hulu, Prime, et cetera. But it seems that, you know, you mentioned earlier, the made-for-TV movie used to be the highlight of the Emmy Awards. It would be like the final category where a Brian song would win. Now, you don't, there are many cases where the made-for-TV movies, in terms of categories, you don't have separate ones for acting or writing or directing. They're mixed in with miniseries, so they don't have much of a shot. Although this year, there might be a shot with the Weird Al Yankovic film on Roku because of Daniel Radcliffe's performance. What do you think about the state of made-for-TV movies and how the Emmy Awards have seemed to be, you know, giving them an afterthought now?
Well, two things. Is I come from that era, so I'm nostalgic for the fact that there was once upon a time where almost half the country could sit down and watch one movie over the course of a single night in the span of 90 minutes to 2 hours, have their minds opened and their hearts changed, and bring some real enlightenment to mass audiences. And it was a powerful form and medium in its day and age. But we now have we're in the streaming era, and what once was a single night event is now an 8-hour limited series over on a streamer. It doesn't mean that they don't carry an equal weight. These are some of the most beautifully made and well-crafted television that the world's ever seen. I think, of course, of the success in the past decade of the HBO miniseries Chernobyl. What's interesting about this and why it's important that we don't underestimate the power of those formats to do what TV movies once did is that they're now available on streaming services that can be seen well beyond our national borders. It's now possible in many instances for these to be streamed globally and even used on across other services like YouTube. So, for example, Chernobyl went on to be seen throughout Russia, even though it was banned by the Russians. And it gave Russia, a lot of Russian citizens, a chance to rethink their received knowledge and history of that apocryphal event. The other thing to say is that I think it's also important to think about genre and format here. The Day After was in a long line of disaster action movies, and we've seen thousands of these in the history of Hollywood. And it was the ability of those sorts of genres to reach popular audiences that think that they're watching a thriller or seeing some sort of apocryphal events play out, that then you could embed these important, powerful lessons. So I think that's important to think about when we see how today's limited series can sometimes blend, for example, a zombie series where they can set all sorts of very important, vital issues about the way we understand and make meaning in the world to our understanding of what might happen in the case of the apocalypse and a zombie attack. So I take these opportunities very seriously. I think those shows like The Last of Us are capable of delivering just as powerful a lesson as the TV movies of yore used to do.
Mm-hmm. I'm happy to say that YouTube has started playing some of the movie of the weeks that ABC had for so many years in the 1970s, and I hope Brian's Song will be among them. So check YouTube out, and I hope the day after will be in that package also at some point. I know it gets rarely seen. I think Turner Classic Movies has shown at least once. I'm not sure if other people have, but I hope that – I think it's very important in this day and age that that film in particular come back and be seen more regularly than it is, because it is a very, as you say, it's a very incredible movie, and I still remember it from 40 years ago. The book is called Apocalypse Television, How the Day After Helped End the Cold War. It is published by Applause Books. For more details about the book and where you can find it, all you have to do is go to applausebooks.com. It's applausebooks.com. And we're going to work with the Applause Books people, David, to get a copy or two of your book to be at one of our upcoming Classic Trivia Segment prizes. We really would love that. David, thank you again for coming on. Congratulations on writing this book. Congratulations on remembering one of the very best made-for-TV films and one of the really, truly great television highlights of the last 50 years. And we really appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
Much appreciated, Simon. I appreciate you reaching out and letting your audience know about the book.
You're very, very welcome, Dave. Take care. Have a wonderful holiday season and a great new year ahead.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
David Craig, the author of Apocalypse Television, joining us live from Cambridge, Massachusetts, outside Boston. Classic trivia question coming up. First, this word from Sun and Swell. You know, Sun and Swell, in case you haven't heard, is the first online grocery store with a fine line of healthy, great-tasting foods that come to you in plastic-free, compostable packaging. Every item is 100% vegan, gluten-free, and free of added preservatives or ingredients. If you're looking for a more planet-friendly pantry, well, shop Sun and Swell and get 20% off site-wide when you go to sunandswellfoods.com. That's sunandswellfoods.com. Use the promo code TELEVISED at checkout. That's 20% off your entire order when you use the promo code TELEVISED at sunandswellfoods.com. And by the way, in their product line, they've got rolled oats, trail mix, apple pie bars, energy bites, banana chips, nuts, and so much more, including mango. And they've gotten at least 1,000 five-star reviews. So for all details, go to sunandswellfoods.com. Now it's time for our classic trivia question. It's the next last time that we are offering it over these 2 weeks. And if you're first with the correct answer, we have 5 prizes in play for you, including a free Uber card, a free Redbox movie night card for the folks at Crackle Connect. We've got the Chicago Greatest Hits CD, the Lifetime Limited Rock CD, and from Jeff Melvoin, the Emmy-winning producer and showrunner of Northern Exposure, was on our show 2 months back, his brand-new book, Running the Show, Television from the Inside. You can get all that if you are first to email the answer to this question. What was the musical group on Fernwood Tonight and America Tonight? You know, it's the show that had Bart Gimble played by Martin Mull. Frank Duvall played the person who led the group, famous TV composer of shows like My Three Sons and The Brady Bunch and so on, and also Jerry Hubbard played by Fred Willard. What was the musical group on America Tonight and Fernwood Tonight? You can catch episodes of both on YouTube. email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Remember to enclose your name and your mailing address in the email. If we don't get a winner by the end today, post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. In order to win, you got to play in, so do so, and all the very best. If we have time, we will repeat the question before the end of our second hour. When we come back, coming up in hour number two of our two-hour extravaganza, the executive producer of National Geographic's popular series, Life Below Zero, Joe Litziger, joining us live from Los Angeles. But first, Future Day, they keep on making great channels you can find on smart TV sets and smart devices that are good for any member of the family, you included. We will have executive Jennifer D'Alessandro joining us live from Chicago, the Windy City, after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com. Together, reaching over 100 million listeners around the world every month and growing. The popular podcast series Trek Talking comes your way tomorrow night at BTR. Star Trek Discovery, two of its episodes, the main topic. That's Trek Talking tomorrow, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget the best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Our first hour of Tomorrow Be Televised was brought to you today by online grocery Sun and Swell, offering a world of delicious snacks and pantry faves anytime. And by Liquid IV, fueling life's adventures and your well-being with real hydrating. The start of our second hour is brought to you today by BlendJet, the portable blender letting you make French smoothies, shakes, or mixed drinks on the go wherever you go. Welcome back to the second hour of this two-hour special edition of Tomorrow Be Televised on the Ides of November 2023. And welcome those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Coming up, I'm with you live from New York, 51 degrees at the top of the hour. More great guests coming your way in the 60 minutes ahead, and we invite you to be part of the program. Very simple. Pick up the phone and call us, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe. You're on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio, or get into our chat room, SimonApple04. You will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And, of course, you can connect and interact with others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon, your Blog Talk Radio speaker, tune, and screen. Follow the instructions. Other people can live with you. Our next guest is one of the key executives at Future Today. You may not know the name of the company, but you certainly may know the many channels that it presents on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles like Foursome and iFood TV and Brat TV and Happy Kids and Kid City. Joining us live from Chicago, the Windy City, Jennifer D'Alessandro. Jennifer, happy you're here.
Hi, Simon. Thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure to have you. Future Day is just like flying on all cylinders. You got all. How many channels do you have right now?
We have 300 and counting.
And are all 300 available in the United States, or is it, you know, so many in the United States, so many in England, so many other parts of the world?
Yes, so we have a huge presence in the United States, but we are also available in Canada, Mexico, Brazil, UK, and India.
And it seems like the mantra of your company is TV channels and TV programming that is good for all ages. Fair assessment?
Definitely a fair assessment. We start from baby and go all the way up to entertainment lifestyle for the adults.
And how did the company get going? Why was the decision made, let's dive into making these channels for smart TV sets and devices as well as multi-channel? And we should point out that a lot of the programming is original. It is made for these services.
So, yeah, so the company started in 2006, so long ago. We're a pioneer in this space. We have had a lot of success in building true free options for people living in that AVOD CTV space. And since, you know, in 2006, it started with iFood, and then it just started growing from there. And we follow our consumer. We follow the viewer. We build out things that they want to see, and we're refreshing constantly. It's really cool. Happy Kids started in 2013, and it was born because of one of our co-founder, Vikrant Mathur's daughters, was a baby, and there wasn't a lot of safe content for her. So Vikrant launched Happy Kids, and as his daughter has grown, Happy Kids has grown. So it started out with nursery rhymes and baby shows, and now we are really moving into that family space, not forgetting the baby and the kids and it's running the gamut, but now we're starting to add in TV, movies, game shows like Deal or No Deal is sitting in Happy Kids now, really giving somebody that true family environment that is safe to consume with your children.
What goes into the making of a service, whether it is iFood TV or Brat TV or Happy Kids? What kind of parameters do you set in terms of how a channel operates, the kind of content it presents, the suitability of the content, and so forth?
So they are definitely speaking to the genre that they are built to. And iFood was the first one. So obviously you're going to find cooking, baking, all food-related content in there. We continue to expand that and explore new opportunities. And then all the other channels have their own identity and own entry point. So that's another cool differentiator for us is there's no such thing as a Future Today app. They all have their own entry point, own identity. All 300 of them can be downloaded. So they're really niche-based all the way to broad-based. Our movie channels are spanning family, kids, up to, you know, your horrors, your true crimes, your westerns. It's truly running the gamut.
And you also work with FilmRise, which is an organization that itself mm-hmm. has become quite hot in terms of putting together not only specific channels, but also really diving into classic TV, whether it is shows like Naked City, mm-hmm. Route 66, and others that have definitely stood the test of time.
Yes, FilmRise was one of our first partners in the partner channel side, and we truly value their partnership. They're doing great things. They're expanding. You know, there's FilmRise, different FilmRise channels for every genre now, in addition to the main FilmRise app.
We're speaking with Jennifer D'Alessandro. She is one of the key execs of Future Today. They are the distributor of lots of programming and as well as various channels like Happy Kids and Brat TV and others as well. And they're available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles as well. And she joins us live from the Windy City, Chicago, Illinois, this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Time now, I'm with you live from New Weber, York, east of where Jennifer is, where it's now 52 degrees at the top of the hour. Let's hear from you. Make a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. And coming up later this half hour, we're going to have a comment about a TV festival that happened here in New York, and probably a lot of people didn't know about it. So what's up, Starable? We'll get to that after our interview, so stay tuned. And coming up, by the way, after the bottom of the hour, we will be joined by Joe Lindzer. He is the executive producer of the very popular Nat Geo series, Life Below Zero, that started its latest season, number 22, last night. Jennifer, talk about iFood. How is that different, not only from Food Network and Cooking Channel, but also the number of food or foodie-type services like Gusto TV and TasteMade and So Yummy and others that have also broken through smart TV sets and devices?
So iFood is unique in that we give so many people a voice and a place to be heard and seen. And it's a very collaborative channel, and there's a ton of spinoffs from there too. So we have iFood Thai food, iFood Mexican food, and it really just gives people a voice and a lot of they create their own content. So we give them a platform to be showing their content that they're making, and it's great quality stuff.
And what about Brat TV? What's that all about?
Brat TV joined us about a little over a year ago, I would say. So we created their CTV AVOD app for them. They are known in the YouTube space, but they didn't have a presence in that AVOD space, so we built the app for them. Brat TV is a great place for teens. It's all comedies and dramas based for that, 14-year-old, 16-year-old, safe space for them to come and see shows that they want to watch and not be in Happy Kids, where maybe Happy Kids to them seems too young or their younger siblings are watching it. This gives them their own space to have.
Mm-hmm. I believe we had Black TV's people mm-hmm. on this program before, and we should point out that, as I said, a lot of their content is original. It is first run, and it's very
yes.
ambitious.
Yes. They do a really great job producing quality content, full episodes, full seasons, and multiple seasons of these shows.
And you mentioned Happy Kids, which seems to be one of your most popular. How is that different from other kids and family services out there?
So Happy Kids, I think it's more important to go back to Future Today. Future Today is an independent publisher. There's not many of us left out there that are independent publishers. We're also minority-owned. And so we have our co-founders, and they put everything they have into these channels. We own and operate all of our own channels. So that's key. And with Happy Kids, we are really trying to follow that viewer and stay with them. So we're refreshing, uploading 200-plus pieces of content every single day into Happy Kids. We license content. We partner with anybody and everybody out there, with all the major creators, content creators, as well as influencer content. We give them a great place. We work with Ryan's World. We work with Kid City, Ninja Kids. We also have the nostalgic play. You can watch with your children. You know, I grew up with Care Bear, Strawberry Shortcake, all of that good stuff, and now I can watch it on Happy Kids. We're also dabbling into the original content space, and we work with partners to create exclusive content that can only be seen on Happy Kids.
Mm-hmm. Here's two stats that are really, really interesting. One is that you have on Happy Kids alone, over 110,000 titles, and thereby you have about 150-plus organizations that partner with you or supply content. The other is that I believe it's this year you've had, 21% growth in viewership over the last year. I mean, how phenomenal is that?
It's a great place to be, Simon. You know, and it's going to keep happening because that shift, as you read everywhere, that shift of people moving from traditional linear broadcast over to that CTV streaming world, it's going to continue happening. And we were born in the cord, never space. So our audience is a unique incremental reach audience because these people are not used to having to go find a show that they know ran on a certain network. Our people just want to watch a good show. They do a search on it. They see that ours is free, which is key, given all of this world we're living in where our bills are getting really high to have all of these channels. And then they get comfortable and stay with us.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you this later in the half hour, but I'll do it now because you're starting to bring it up, which is we are seeing, particularly this year, this incredible explosion of new networks. Many of them are independently owned. Mm-hmm. Many of them are owned or managed by people of color, organizations of color, and all sorts of genres. It's not, you know, the all Murder, She Wrote, the all this or that, you know, reruns of a series, you know, single series channel. We're talking about very ambitious channels. We had one recently, Seji TV, which is run by a person of color, Edward. Dr. Phil is going to be launching a network out of Fort Worth, Texas, next February. We just heard about Outlaw TV, Jesse James, the unscripted programming star. He's launching his own network next year. So, I mean, and also we're finding out about YouTube, Dude Perfect and others that either have already or will be launching their own channels, and not just taking this for YouTube stuff, but adding additional programming, something being interactive. Why do you think we are seeing this incredible titanic or tidal wave of original services pop on the scene?
I think that people are always looking for something new and something that they can kind of customize to themselves. And a lot of these channels that are launching are falling in the fast lane, and that's a good question, too. How do you define fast? Everybody defines it differently. But a lot of these fast channels are the extension off of cable and linear, and they're still giving that experience of, well, we're going to decide what show you're watching right now, what time of day you're going to watch it, where most of our channels are sitting in the AVOD space. So it's a true you, whatever you want to watch, go find it. Whatever time, where you want to watch it, it's all up to you. So there's a lot of options, and a lot of those options are sitting in the fast channel environment where it's still based on a time clock. It's based on a TV guide scenario of people scrolling and looking for something to watch.
For the uninitiated listeners out there, AVOD stands for Advertising Video On Demand. How are you doing with advertising on these services?
Great. Obviously, that's my main lane here, so I will brag about that. But, you know, in a year that has been really tough, the writer's strike, with a lot of things going on in the world that were causing budgets to be down, budgets to be cut, we did really well this year. And we saw a big increase of new partners, but more importantly, all of our returning partners came back. And that's not easy to do because, like you said just now, there's so many options. So to make sure that we are putting forward the best quality content, not to mention also that perfect partnership, the one-to-one partnership, that we are going to take care of our partners and we want them to keep coming back and we're here for them.
Are you finding that there are certain national advertisers or certain categories of national advertisers that are more interested in your channels than others?
No. I would say we're all over the place, and I love that you just asked me this question because a lot of people think about the kids' space, the family space. Well, that's just going to be your toys, or that's going to be an endemic advertiser. But if you really think about it, that purchase power of the family and the kids is undeniable. That kid is the CEO of the household. And when you have a space like Happy Kids, 94% co-viewing is going on in Happy Kids. That's huge. These kids are talking about the ads. They're telling their parents, I want to buy this stuff, what I want to eat for dinner, where do I want to go on vacation, what kind of car are we going to buy. They have a lot to say, and that's not going to go away. That started in COVID, and it didn't go away. It's still here. That this family unit is making decisions together. So people that aren't buying kids, they should be. They're missing out on a ton of potential consumers and very, very large engaged audiences.
Yeah. One of the channels that caught my eye by the name, please explain, Encourage TV. What is that service all about?
Yes, so I'm glad that I got to follow someone that's putting stuff on UpTV. So Encourage TV is very similar. It's a faith-based family channel that offers very safe content, movies, TV shows. Heartland is a very famous show throughout the U.S. and Canada, and that can be found on Encourage TV.
Heartland, by the way, we had the executive producer on. It is the longest-running family drama of its kind on television. And it's also on UpTV as well. It's been a favorite, usually on Sunday nights. And I have to say, it's amazing how that show just continues to drive on and gain audience, and sometimes under sort of the radar screen for a lot of critics.
Right. Maybe we'll change that by our conversation today.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And if you want to hear the episode we did with the executive producer of Heartland, a few months ago, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised, as well as go to all of our podcast destinations. We're speaking with Jennifer D'Alessandro. She's one of the key executives at Future Today, one of the top suppliers of family-friendly programming all over the place, good for all ages, including a bunch of services like Fossum and iFood TV, Brat TV, Encourage TV, et cetera, Happy Kids too. They're available on smart TV sets, smart devices, and multi-channel bundles. In a moment, we'll find out what they're up to for 2024 and beyond. And if you have a question or comment in remaining minutes with Jennifer, make that call now from wherever you are. It's easy, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04Main. Don't forget, next week, our annual Thanksgiving week tradition, our triple header, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, back-to-back-to-back episodes. The Monday episode will be on a special time, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. That's noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific. The other two, Tuesday and Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific. And Tuesday, among our guests, we'll have the executive producers of the new Fox Nation special, Liberty or Death, Boston Tea Party. The Dr. Drama is executive produced by Tim Kelly and Lorenzo D. Boni, along with Rob Lowe, who also is the host of the program. They're both with us, Tim and Lorenzo. That's Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, our regular time right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Since the writer's strike and the screen actor's strike have ended, are you getting like an uptick in terms of proposals for people who want to create their own channels or supply programming or create their own programming through your company?
We really didn't get hit too bad with the writer's strike. We were still in conversations, and so I don't think so. Not yet. I hope so. Doors open. we have a lot of announcements coming out that we've been working on while the strike was going on.
Uh-huh. Before we get into 2024, talk about Fossum. That's one service also that's very popular with people that we have not discussed. Let's do it now.
Mm-hmm. Great. Fossum is a entertainment channel, and it has thousands and thousands of movie titles living in there, in addition to TV shows, favorites, Hell's Kitchen lives in there. It's just a really huge flagship for us. We license content through all the major players out there to make sure we have the best titles. And, you know, you did ask me what's going, or you said we're going to start talking about 2024. Fossum is a hot topic for us in 2024. We're really looking to beef this up and increase our titles and have a space for all ages with very well-known titles to help bring more viewers to our channel.
Mm-hmm. And what genres, if you can't name specific networks, can you say like what genres you're looking at in terms of developing them into services?
So I can tell you the three that actually just went through this past week, if in case you missed it in the trades. We are launching the Wiggles channel in December. We also are launching a Total Drama channel. If you're not familiar, that is a cartoon reality-based TV show that is for the teen audience. So we will have the entire
Total Drama
library.
Island. I remember that very well.
Yes. So Total Drama Island is the premiere episode, and then there's six more episodes after that to round out the franchise. So we're really excited about that. You know, aging up our audience and really just looking at that family unit. And we're going to continue down that path. Another cool thing is for the holidays, we really wanted to focus on big names. So you can find Christmas Vacation, A Christmas Story, Miracle on 34th Street, all on Fossum right now, free to the consumers. So we're really changing our game. We're going after quality more than quantity and really want to become a go-to for viewers looking for a free option.
At some point, do you see interactivity being part of your services where you have interactive elements, whether it's the ability to play with the content and determine where you want it to go with your voice or voice remote or your body language, or order products and services through interactive advertising, or get material delivered to you if you want through the likes of a DoorDash or a Grubhub or an Instacart. Is that going to be something that you're going to take advantage of in the coming year or years?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. We're already there on, let's say, 60% of what you just mentioned. We work with QR coding. We work with interactive overlays. We do text to consumer, all of that good stuff. Definitely on our horizon is that voice to interact, and certainly shoppable marketing is out there. We did just launch a gaming component to Happy Kids. So that's getting our viewers to engage more and stop and spend more time. And we launched three games right now that we're testing, and there will be more coming. We're also looking at some other options, too, just to get that viewer more engaged with us.
In recent months, we've seen the formation of two organizations to try to alert the public, advertisers, et cetera, about the existence of services like or companies like Feature Day. One is the Independent Streaming Alliance. The other is the Streaming Innovation Alliance. Is Feature Day involved with either or both of them? And what do you think so far, if you are?
Yes, so we're a founding member of the Independent Streaming Alliance, and it's going great. Hopefully people will start taking note, and the goal is to be attending more events and evangelizing and really educating the players that it's okay to go beyond what you're used to doing. And it's okay to look at properties that you might not have heard of. Doesn't mean that they're not just as good and bring just as good quality and content and the viewers and all of that good stuff.
Final question, two-parter for you, Jennifer. One, at some point will Feature Today provide its own bundle, a la Zumo or Tubi or Pluto TV. We know that there's the companies out there that are bundling services like Best Ever Channels, what you're doing, Ronin Media Networks, others, et cetera. Is that a long-term game plan to do your own, like a Future Today bundle of channels? And the second thing is participation in the new fronts or maybe doing your own upfront event.
Yep. Let's go with that one first. We participated for the first time this past year. We had an activation site. On Wednesdays, they do a really nice job of inviting the independent publishers to come and be at one location all day instead of having have to go find a venue and do a whole thing. So we had an activation station, and it turned out really well. We had great attendance, and we definitely plan on being there again next year. So that's that. And then going back to the bundle question, yes, we're looking at every option right now. Those would be our fast channels. We do have several fast channels that can be bundled together right now that are available.
And one other thing, is there a thought about doing specific channels that are aimed at African Americans, Latinos, Asian Americans, Native Americans, and so on and so forth, that particularly emphasize original programming?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. So not only are we minority-owned, we're NMSBC certified, we do have dedicated channels that celebrate actors, writers, producers, directors, and give them a platform to be seen and heard. So in that category, we have Film Rise en Español, we have Happy Kids en Español, we have Maverick Black Cinema, we have Film Rise Pride, and many, many, many more of those channels are living out there. So we definitely can help people find that kind of content.
If you want to know more about Future Today and all the many channels that it provides through smart TV sets, smart device, and multi-channel bundles, including Awesome and iFood TV, Brat TV, Encourage TV, Happy Kids, Kids TV, et cetera, here's where you go online, futuretodayinc.com, that's futuretodayinc.com. Jennifer D'Alessandro, thank you so much for joining us to talk about where Future Today is at now and will be next year and beyond. It's been a pleasure to have you. All the very best to you. Great holiday season and an even better 2024 ahead.
Same to you. Thank you so much for having me.
It's a pleasure, Jennifer. Take care. Enjoy.
Thank you. Bye.
Jennifer D'Alessandro, joining us live from Chicago, one of the key executives at Future Today over there. More tomorrow be televised. We have a comment about what's up, Steribolt. We'll get to that. First, the word from BlendJet. If your blender is bulky and a pain to operate, well, give BlendJet the opportunity to make fresh smoothies, shakes, or mixed drinks and easy pleasure. Absolutely. You know, BlendJet is so portable to work up a smoothie at the office or your favorite protein booster at the gym or a poolside margarita. It's quiet to operate and rechargeable on the go anywhere. So what are you waiting for? Go to BlendJet.com and grab yours today and be sure to use the promo code TELEVISE to get 12% off your order. And get this, free two-day shipping. That's right, 12% off your order of BlendJet and free two-day shipping. So how about this for the holidays? Blend anytime, anywhere, BlendJet. Did you know that here in New York this past weekend there was a TV festival called Steribolt? I'm going to make a guess. Probably not. And that's the subject of this comment. Steribolt has actually been around New York and Los Angeles for quite a while. I first went to Steribolt a number of years ago before the pandemic. And it was a good festival, like the New York Television Festival, like Series Fest, other festivals that involve TV around the country, whether pure TV or a mix of film and TV. They showcased pilots from up-and-coming TV series producers and show creators and gave them the opportunity to be showcased, to be in the spotlight, and even win awards, and even get the opportunity to connect with people who maybe could take their ideas or others and put them on the air, whether it was ABC or HBO or Netflix. The pandemic slowed things for a while, and then last year, Steribolt came back both in Los Angeles and New York. Steribolt, as I mentioned, had their latest New York event this past weekend at a theater in Manhattan's Soho District. And we wanted to not only be there and cover it, we wanted to actually have the people behind Steribolt, the organizers, on this program. Because get this, it is now the only pure television festival in this city proper. New York Television Festival has not been around for 5 years. It looks like they will never come back. Other festivals have sort of come and gone. This is the one that right now is enduring. And guess what? After 2 weeks of emails and Facebook messages, not one person at Steribble, not one person had the ability or the foresight to email me back, to Facebook me back, and say if we could go, or say if we could have them on the air, or say if we could get the winners of the festival on the air down the road. To be honest, incredibly disappointing, very disappointing, deeply disappointing that that happened. The most disappointing is they didn't make the effort to communicate back. However, in spite of the disappointment, we are going to keep trying to get the winners of Steribble this past weekend, whether for comedy, drama, miniseries, unscripted program, on this program, hopefully as early as Thanksgiving week or down the road. So if anybody from Steribble is listening, or if anybody who handles publicity for Steribble is listening, communicate. Let us know you're out there. We've given you the ability to hear the program. We've told you where to go, blogtalkradio.com/televised, our podcast. Hopefully our website, by the way, will be back up and running. We are trying to see if we can do it as early as next week. But communicate. Do it, do it, do it. We want to showcase you. We want to showcase the people you're helping. And frankly, I think it's a disservice to the very people who are using your event to showcase what they're up to and what they're what's out to cause in television. Come on. Communicate. We want to showcase you. What's up, Steribble? How about connecting with us and having your creators connect with us? We'd love them, and we'd love to have them. When we come back, we will have somebody who is great to connect to. He's Joe Listiger, the executive producer of the popular Nat Geo series Life Below Zero, started its 22nd season last night. And if we have time, one more shot for you with our classic trivia question. All that coming up in our final half hour, which begins after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, and Tune.com, together reaching over 100 million listeners around the world every month and growing. You know, it's the holiday season, and for you dads out there, here's a program on BTR that might help you go through it even better, not just for yourself, but for your family. It's the Father Matters Show. Check it out next Tuesday, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific. That's the Father Matters Show next Tuesday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, fathers, mothers, sisters, daughters, brothers, the whole family, they matter too. And remember, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube. Welcome back to our final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised, our super two-hour Wednesday afternoon edition for you. And this half hour of our program is brought to you by Wild, the reusable, refillable natural deodorant that's kind to your body and the planet. Tommy, I'm with you live from the Big Apple. Put 51 degrees at the bottom of the hour. One more half hour to go. Another great guest coming away. And we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906. Or use that chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. From year after year, one of the big hits on Nat Geographic, available on cable and satellite, is Life Below Zero. It shows a side of life that very few people get to see. And the 22nd season of that program began last night. And joining us live to talk about it, from Los Angeles, the executive producer, Joe Listiger. Joe, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Simon. Unlike Steribble, I am very excited to be on this program.
Well, we're excited to have you, Joe, and very excited that you come off so soon after your latest season premieres. Have you gotten any feedback from people about season 22?
We have. Obviously, it's just fresh aired last night. Special episode focusing on the breakup of the Yukon River, which one of our participants live along the river, and every year there is a significant weather event that happens, whereas the Yukon River freezes and then obviously thaws out, and sometimes that thaw can be just a beautiful, magical spectacle to watch, and sometimes it can be a property and life-threatening event. And for this episode, we were there, and since it's aired, I guess we can do some spoilers, but, our participants had to be evacuated and helicoptered out along with their 20-something dogs.
Mm-hmm. Explain for people who haven't seen the series before, even after all this time, how it works. You pick people, you have them come to a particular environment that obviously, according to the title, is below zero. How do you pick the places they go, and how do you pick the people that go there?
Sure. I mean, the show is somewhat unique in that we don't – it's not produced in that we place people, you know, from the lower 48, or it's like, can you survive in Alaska? We find Alaskans, people who have lived there and are living this authentic lifestyle. So really rather than finding the places, we find the people, either through blogs or, you know, now social media. When we started this show 12 years ago, we even had to do tree mail, which is literally posting notices on trees in the woods, you know, because our show focuses on people who, or some of them at least, who don't, you know, who are completely off the grid, not in the cities, and only come into society occasionally. So really the focus is on just finding those authentic characters living in Alaska, living a subsistence lifestyle.
And once you find these characters, Joe, how much time do you and your production team spend with them?
It can vary, but we're typically, each season follows relatively a year in their lives. We go out multiple times a year. We find that most crew can be in, you know, our filming environment is very isolated and, depending upon the weather, very extreme. And we find that most crew members do well to keep these visits around 2 to 3 weeks. So we go out several times a year for about, you know, for a couple weeks.
And when you find these people and you spend time with them, what is on their mind, or what is how they live, how they deal with this extreme weather or this extreme environment that, you know, captures your imagination, captures their imagination, and ultimately captures the viewer's imagination?
Yeah, you know, I think extreme for them, and I guess for a lot of people, is relative. You know, when we first start talking to our cast members or potential cast members, they oftentimes don't see their environment even as that extreme, even when there are, you know, polar bears or bears and negative 70 and temperatures that, you know, you literally could freeze. You know, they talk to me and they're like, well, you know, in Los Angeles, the 405 is pretty extreme and I could never do that. So, you know, for them, I guess it's relative what is extreme. But for us in the viewer, I think the fascination is this, I guess, unique lifestyle that they have chosen to live, oftentimes away from society, isolated, and putting their survival in their own hands, if that means hunting or fishing or making their own clothes. And most of them are not on any type of grid system, you know, no running water, no electricity, and no supermarkets. So it's really, I guess, as, you know, self-sufficient as they can be. And when we're there, and I think one of the appeals for the show is I think people enjoy watching self-sufficiency. People enjoy watching people take not just their lives into their own hands, but the day-to-day. And for some people, that could be extremely challenging, and some people that could be their ideal life.
Do they ever express that on camera, an attitude along the lines of extreme? What extreme? you know, where you're living, whether Los Angeles or New York or Texas or Chicago or the Pacific Northwest, that's extreme. You know, the air quality in L.A., you know, I'm trying to sort of using it as a sort of a devil's advocate kind of thing, or the craziness of New York, the pace of being a New Yorker, that's extreme. That's extreme to us. You know, here, we got it made, or we're trying to get it made.
Yeah, absolutely. Both on Life Below Zero and also airing currently is Life Below Zero Next Generation. And on that show, tends to be more of a younger, you know, people who have lived in the city and have found the cities to be extreme, too extreme, and moved out to the Alaskan Life Below Zero bears and weather to have a less extreme environment. But across all the Life Below Zero shows, definitely one of the main things we explore is the why of the lifestyle. Why did you move out here? Why are you currently living out here? And why do you choose, you know, to do what you do? And like you mentioned, for some of the participants, you know, they've specifically called out the 405 in LA, and then definitely, you know, New York City is probably the most extreme place to all of our Alaskans. It's probably the place that they would, you know, just feel the most overwhelmed, in the same way that probably some city folks or, you know, New Yorkers or LA or whomever would feel nervous being in negative 70 degree weather surrounded by wolves and bears. But it's absolutely something we explore on the show.
The new season of Life Below Zero comes your way Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. East Pacific time on National Geographic, available on cable and satellite. And we've got Joe Lindsay, the executive producer of the program, with us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom and I are with you live from the Big Apple, 51 degrees at the bottom of the hour. And we want to hear you interact with our guests and yours truly. So give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Again, coming your way on Friday, our final of our three episodes this pre-Thanksgiving week, we've got the Chief Executive Officer of Unify, Jeff Lawrence. That is a mobile app, soon to be a smart TV and device app, where you make the search situation so much easier. Jeff Lawrence of Unify, that's Friday. He's our lead guest, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, here exclusively on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Joe, is there a, as these seasons have gone on, has it become easier or harder given the reputation of the series and all the notoriety it's gotten on Nat Geo? Is it easier or harder to find people, unique people, to be subjects for this?
That's a great question. I think the show airs on National Geographic and is produced by BBC Studios, and those two names obviously carry a lot of weight and trust in their journalistic integrity and truth-telling. And when we first started this show, there was a little bit of a reluctancy to come aboard. There are many Alaskan TV shows, and some are better than others. Some are more truthful than others. And I think once we got known more so than the publicity or the awards that the shows have won, once we've got known within Alaska, that has made finding people easier because they have seen the show and seen that we don't dramatize, that what we show is authentic and is real. And I think that has, you know, our reputation across Alaska and by the Alaskans that we film with has been a positive. Of course, in terms of viewers, it's wonderful to have, you know, the Emmys make a difference and the participants becoming more known, you know, in social media and that kind of stuff helps drive in new viewers. And of course, new viewers are always a wonderful thing.
And when you think about it, when it comes to one particular state that has become the state of unscripted television, Alaska certainly is right up there near the top, if not at the top, because of programs like this, Gold Rush and other shows on Discovery Channel, other networks doing their thing. there's something about Alaska that just seems to strike home, not only with people producing the shows, but certainly people watching the shows, in terms of them. Do you have a sense of what it is?
I think so. You know, when we started this, we counted 13 other Alaska programs on the air. That sort of has ebbed and flows, and there's continue. Like you mentioned, you know, we're going on season 22. We just completed our 200th episode of Life Below Zero, almost 400 episodes of Life Below Zero when you include the spinoff. So it definitely seems to be appealing to the audience. And for me, having been there and been to many, if not all, of these locations, on the surface level, it's simply beautiful. You know, there's obviously a lot of beautiful places across the lower 48 in America and the world. But even going into Anchorage, you know, biggest city in Alaska, it's fairly gorgeous just being in the city. Then you go 10 minutes out and it's some of the most spectacular scenery you've ever seen. And you fly an hour or 2 hours or 5 hours into the interior of Alaska or the coastal communities or the places that aren't the big city. The scenery is mind-blowingly, awe-inspiringly beautiful. Then, on top of that, it's all of it, or at least the majority of the state, is untamed and wild. And I think a lot of us, myself included, you know, who live in Los Angeles, have that aspiration, at least, or that desire to live in the wilderness or to be in the wilderness like a lot of our ancestors were. And really, I think what people find, one of the things that people find appealing is that self-sufficiency. And, of course, that self-sufficiency in an incredibly beautiful setting.
There's two episodes coming up that from the titles sound very, very dramatic. One is the next one coming up next Tuesday night called Bulletproof, which deals with one of the subjects who is, let's say, a mature woman who is out to restore a relic where she lives. And then a couple of weeks later, there's an episode called The Way of the Bear, which deals with the stalking of a predator through territory that the subject is very unfamiliar with. Is that fair to say that that at least as far as this recent season go, they may be like the dramatic high points?
There are, I mean, of course, I'm fond of every episode, and I would say they're all of the stories are dramatic high points. But yes, those couple stories, and particularly in the episodes coming up, are definitely very exciting.
Mm-hmm. And on the flip side, what about humorous moments? What about moments that you sort of like chuckle to yourself, that, and then you figure out, yeah, I can see the logic of what this person is doing, or how inventive this person is, or how this person is trying to deal with a specific force of nature.
What a great question. You know, I think when we first started this show, it started out sort of as a horror show. Like Life Below Zero was, you know, almost sort of a David Fincher kind of, you know, real life, obviously David Fincher, but extreme take on the psychology of what it takes to be out there. But as we've progressed over the last decade and hundreds of episodes, it's become more of a character study as the audience and we, the filmmakers, you know, get to know the subjects. It affords the ability to slow down and not just focus on perhaps the always most extreme elements. And, you know, of course, when we're out there, it's not extreme 24 hours a day. There are those moments. And one of the things I think we've been able to do over the last several years, and I'm excited about this upcoming season, is be able to have those moments of levity and those moments of taking a breath when you're not in that extreme environment either, when you, you know, of course, are safe inside, or even during extreme situations, during a hunt or harvest or a weather event, that the ability to take a breath and sort of laugh a little at the circumstances is definitely something we are exploring and something that we hope resonates with the viewer.
How do the subjects, whether on Life Below Zero or Next Generation, what kind of feedback do you get from them about the way they've been portrayed?
That's very, very – the feedback from the subjects is extremely important to us, you know, for a variety of reasons. Of course, we want them to continue being on the show, and we want to honor our promise to them, which is, you know, that we are telling authentic stories. Particularly now, as the show has evolved so much, we collaborate with our participants. They are a huge part of what we do. You know, we never, when we go out there, as I mentioned earlier, we're out there for a couple weeks at a time. You know, we never are like, you know, could you, you know, why don't you do this? All of our stories come from them. They say, in the next several months, I'm going to be doing this thing, or I need to fill my freezer, or I need to build dog houses, or whatever those stories. So the initial story planning, I guess, if you can even call it planning, but the wondering what we'll be doing when we're out there, that is 100% driven by the cast. And as far as the final product, I wouldn't say all of them watch the show, but some of them, you know, watch it religiously. And there is a unique personality when it comes to moving to Alaska. And I'll say that I think if any of our participants saw something portrayed inaccurately or something they didn't agree with, they wouldn't come back. Our authenticity is extremely important, of course, to the viewer, but also, you know, important for our relationship and the trust that we have with the cast. And I think through that trust, the more, you know, the more they trust us, the more they are willing to open up and share, you know, as I mentioned before, not just the what they are doing, you know, the process or but about the why. And, you know, our cast over the last many years on across all the shows have shared extremely personal things in the midst of living the day-to-day life, you know, about why they're out there or about family tragedies or their own personal tragedies or what it's like for them to get older. You know, that's one of the things we explore a lot is that we talk a lot about self-sufficiency, and that's, of course, very important to all of our cast, but that self-sufficiency changes, you know, when a lot of them moved out there when they were, either they were born there or moved out there when they were 20, but, you know, they get 70, 80 years old, how much self-sufficiency can they continue to have? But those themes and those elements and the trust from the cast is very, very important to us.
The new season of Life Below Zero comes your way Tuesday night, 9 p.m. Pacific time on National Geographic, available on cable and satellite. So check your local places where they are available in your area. And some markets are also running on smart TV sets, devices, and multi-channel bundles. More details about the program and the service online, go to www.natgotv.com or nationalgeographic.com. That's www.natgotv.com. or nationalgeographic.com. Life Below Zero, new season, now on Tuesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Joe Lisler, the executive producer of the program, thank you for making the time to join us. Congratulations on the start of season 22, hopefully many, many more of that, and the spinoff series, Life Below Zero, Next Generation, as well. It's been a great pleasure having you on.
Wonderful, Simon. Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed your show.
You're very, very welcome. Thank you for that. And have yourself a wonderful holiday season. And you and all your crew, a great, great new year ahead.
Thank you. You too. Thanks.
Take care. Joe Lichtenstein, the executive producer of Life Below Zero, joining us live from Los Angeles. We'll wrap the program up with our classic trivia question and an appeal after this word from Wild. Are you out to make your personal well-being more natural and eco-friendly? Well, then give Wild a try. Wild deodorant, which I use now regularly, has natural ingredients that freshen you anytime for any occasion. And Wild comes in a variety of scent color combinations, such as jasmine and mandarin blossom, or fresh cotton and sea salt. There's no harsh chemicals to fret about, and if you want a refill that gets delivered right to your door, you can have it. So go Wild today with a special discount of 25% off your first order when you use the promo code SIMONAPPLE04 at checkout. Go to wearewild.com. That's wearewild.com and use the promo code SIMONAPPLE04 at checkout. Enjoy. I certainly do. Wild is now my natural deodorant to use. Love it. Great scent. Great smell. Love it. Goes on easy. And it has that wonderful refillable canister so you can put the refills in lickety-split time. Wild. It is the natural deodorant that's kind to your body and the planet. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week. If you missed it the first hour, we got it for you the second hour. Five prize in play. Again, here's that question. What was the musical group on Fernwood Tonight or America Tonight? What was the musical group on Fernwood Tonight or America Tonight? That's this, both series episodes are on YouTube. Stars Martin Mull as Bart Gimbel, Jerry Hubbard, played by Fred Willard, and the leader of that group was played by the wonderful composer and handy actor himself, Frank Duvall. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. It's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Put your name and where you're mailing from so that if you win the prizes, they can come right to you as soon as possible. If we don't get a winner by the end of today, post the question tomorrow on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter at UBC Simon, TWBT. In order to win, you got to play in, so do so, and all the very best. Yesterday, nearly 300,000 people gathered across the National Mall in Washington, D.C. in a march for Israel, a march for peace, and a march to free the hostages there. It was an amazing, amazing event. If you had a chance to see it in one way or another, no violence, peaceful, 100%. Congratulations to the organizers, congratulations to everybody who was involved in making that event happen. And keep the prayers coming for the people, the Jewish people, the people of Israel, and the people also dealing powerfully who love Israel and want to have it be a nation in the face of what is going on in the Hamas war in the Middle East. And if you would like to make a contribution to one of the Israel Emergency Funds that is doing a great job in terms of protecting and giving vital supplies to these people, here's where you go, ujafednewyork.org. It's ujafednewyork.org. That's the fund set up by the United Jewish Appeal and the Federation of Jewish Philanthropies here in the Big Apple. It's ujafednewyork.org. Your contribution, big or small, greatly and deeply appreciated. And certainly keep the prayers coming for the state of Israel and for the people dealing with what is going on there. I want to thank all of our guests for being here today and all of you for tuning in. Don't forget, Friday, our third and final episode of the week, we will have Jeff Lawrence, the Chief Executive Officer of Unify. If you came in late on today's episode, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcast on more than 40 affiliates, including the iRadio Podcast Network. And remember, we love hearing from you. Love to get your thoughts about all of our guests and our topics today. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Find me on social media at LinkedIn, Facebook, X, or Twitter. Facebook, LinkedIn, Simon Applebaum, X or Twitter, UBC Simon, TWBT. However you respond, I respond back to you in 24 hours because what you say matters now more than ever. The views expressed are those of the participants. They are not those of Blog Talk Radio and other distributors of this program. Andy Toews, BeachArt General Manager. Jay Sonnenberg is Head of Content. Our second hour tomorrow be televised was brought to you today by Wild, the reusable, refillable, natural deodorant that's kind to your body and the planet. And by BlendJet, the portable blender letting you make fresh smoothies, shakes, or mixed drinks on the go wherever you go. But tomorrow be televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a great rest of your Wednesday. We'll be back on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. You know where, Blog Talk Radio, Speaker Tune and Radio, and all of our podcast affiliates. Whatever you're doing to now and then, make it safe. And please, make it as great as you can. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.